We're recording. Good morning.
Yep, good morning.
We're back again.
We're at it, yep. with topics burning off of the Discord.
It is. And as you said that, my Discord app popped up with a note from Mark.
Of course.
It's early, Mark. Sleep in for the love of God. Oh, boy. I love our patrons on Discord. They give us so many great ideas. We get into so many wonderful conversations.
I went all Professor James on him yesterday with a bunch of math, and they were looking for a quick answer of how much stuff, how much should I mix in this jug to spray? I'm like, well, let's break this down.
Then you said it depends, and everyone you heard the yelling from across the States.
I did, yeah.
I mean, heck, last weekend, you and I and my teenager were playing a video game, and the Discord knew we were, and one of the patrons was like, hey, what you playing?
Mm-hmm. Why can't we play?
You can play. You know, maybe we need to start up a gaming section to the Discord. No, you don't think so?
I don't have that kind of time.
No, neither do I. Neither do I. It seems that our weekly video game is the only time I get my drinking in. Mm. That's not true. That's just a lie.
I drink much more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't nobody, even.
Nobody believed that.
I couldn't even make a poker face in front of a microphone. What does that say? So very brief, what do we call it? Housekeeping.
Yeah, and housekeeping.
Thank you to our latest patron, and I don't know what to say here. Stormy Acres has joined us as a patron.
Nice.
If ever there was a name for farming, it's Stormy Acres, I suppose, or for weather forecasting. I don't know.
Yeah.
And thank you, Stormy, for joining us. We always appreciate the folks that join the patronage family there and help us out and keep the lights on and keep the microphones rolling. So thanks for that.
Yep.
So speaking of the Discord, what was this week's conversation about?
Well, which one? Well, let's say the first one that sparked interest that I thought would be good to talk about, or we did, I should say, is greenhouse plants, and not the technical aspects of greenhouse plants, not necessarily, maybe a little bit, but those of us who buy plants from greenhouses only to find out that what you thought was going to deliver in May now won't come till July.
Which is pretty much, you're done.
It can be, certainly depending on where you live. But, you know, instead of getting deep, deep, deep into it on the Discord and chit-chatting about it, I'm sure there's plenty of others out there who have similar issues or concerns. And we just ought to talk about the reality of it, because we know all too well, for having run a greenhouse and churning out, you know, tens and tens and tens of thousands of plants, what, you know, behind the curtain looks like. And maybe let's just sort of dispel some of the assumptions people have about why this could be happening and show them what the reality is of greenhouse production.
Do you ever think that the folks on the Discord think that when we say, you know what, that's a great podcast topic, it's just our way of saying we don't want to talk about that right now?
Maybe.
I'll have to remember that for next time.
Well, it's like you can't get into a disposition on a server like that, right? It's just it's what the podcast is for. Mm-hmm. Everyone deserves to hear those great, great ideas.
Those great thoughts coming out of our brains right after we take our heads off our pillows.
Anyway, so that's what we're going to talk about today.
That sounds good. Sounds very good. Mm-hmm. So we had a greenhouse for, oh man, three seasons?
Four solid production seasons. Yeah,
four.
Five seasons. So some of you out there who do commercial, you know, that's what you do. You'd be like, five seasons? Why, you know, four seasons, newbies? Yeah, well, trial by fire. And like everything else that we were doing in our hop company, we did it out of necessity. Because the people we were buying plants from, they were just awful. They were disease-ridden, they were insects, they were spindly, it was ugly. It was embarrassing. And there was a grower that we were working with who was one of our hop growers who also had a greenhouse. And we figured, oh, yeah, this might be like a nice little thing we could do. So we started using him as a propagation source. And they were awful. Mm-hmm. It was embarrassing. and we had to do a lot of eating crow and kissing ass to people we pre-sold those plants to, assuming this guy knew what he was doing, but he didn't. So we did it ourselves. And with I have my background in production science background for horticulture. I did a lot of greenhouse work, controlled environment production. So that was a no-brainer for me. And then we had recently hired a field manager, basically, Amanda, who had a heavy background in greenhouse production. So it just fit and was a way for us to diversify a bit.
Yep. Yeah. It also gave us, I'm not going to say something to do in the off season because there is no off season.
Right.
But it did, yeah, it did allow us to plan cash flow a bit as well, because ideally you were selling those plants in March. Which is when you were spending money on your hop yard and not raking anything in. So that was helpful. And so, and we did deposits on plants. So from a pure business cash flow perspective, we were getting deposits, what, November, December? And that absolutely helped keep the lights on.
Yep. But you're taking a risk when you do that, because you're certainly when you first get started, when you're small, you don't have a lot of experience and understand what your, we call it the turn, looks like. So how quickly you can propagate, how long it's going to take, how much space it's going to take, how long they're going to take to grow up so you can get them out, free up the bench space so you can do another turn. And that just takes experience. And if you miscalculate that, or you're a little bit too, as I am wont to do, aggressive in your sales and your expectations, that can lead to customer service issues, right, Greg?
It can. I was gonna use the word cavalier, but okay.
Cavalier, yeah. Yeah, cavalier.
Aggressive works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes, to your point, as great as it is to spread out some of that incoming cash flow, what's worse is having to repay deposits right as you're getting into the hop growing season when you're, you know, rebuying that 3/8 wrench for the 18th time because you can't find the prior 17.
And your labor costs are hitting. I mean, it's just the last thing you want to be doing is hemorrhaging more money while you're already bleeding to death for all of your costs of operation. So,
yep.
So similar mentality to pre-selling twine and all that kind of stuff and cable and whatnot through the slower times. It was all about cash flow and helps to sort of build the coffers back up and reduces the need to go to the bank with your hand out.
Yep. Yeah. But to your point before, I mean, cash flow was part of it, but having a controlled ability to have good quality plant stock was the initial thought process there. Because as you said, we weren't getting what we wanted. We, at that point, we had established fields that were good enough that we could cut rhizomes. And we knew that we had good stuff in-house, but helping we had grown to the point then where we were helping other growers get started. And as you said, we didn't feel good about the plant stock that we were able to find for them.
Correct. And we had enough issues with even buying rhizomes from the West Coast that it wasn't reliable. Just not reliable. And the people that were growing hop plants at the time were asking astronomical amounts of money for them. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, that's ridiculous. So doing the math, sitting down and crunching the numbers, even looking at the infrastructure cost of putting in a giant greenhouse and utilities and a well and all that stuff and the cost of propane to heat through the winter, it was still profitable, like very profitable. And we were selling on what I would consider to be the low end of the price spectrum because we were after, you know, larger volume sales.
Yep.
So, you know, we were at $1.85 to $2.25, I think, per plug. Yes. And some of these other folks that were selling at $6-$7 a plug, they were maybe a little bigger or maybe a little older. But holy cow. I mean, to establish multiple acres at that rate, no way. It's just not feasible. So mm-hmm. we went for the small, non-traditional commercial scale, which is where we were, that sort of dictated our price, where we thought we needed to be to make it viable for everybody. Yeah, it was a pretty smashing success, I'd have to say.
It was. It definitely was when it worked. Right. And I guess we're going to talk about when it didn't. And when it didn't, from the perspective of these are things you you're going to see happen from your plant provider, or if you are a plant provider, things that you can maybe try to mitigate and do more better.
Do more better.
Do more better.
That's a new t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Hopnology, do more better.
Do more better. And of course, as James said, I mean, you're the one from a technical and from an agronomical perspective looking at it. I was dealing with a lot of the fulfillment side of things. And I still wake up screaming sometimes with visions in my head of that color-coded chart of the United States and Canada and what it would cost to ship a tray of plants to various different zones. Because, oh my God, let me just say right up front that even if they want to sponsor us, I will never take money from UPS, USPS, YRC Freight, FedEx, any of these shipping companies.
Old Dominion.
They're all horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. We even went the route of, like, when we shipped to Colorado, we hired a custom critical courier to drive them straight there.
Now, that was a very big order, and we wouldn't have done it otherwise. But yes, correct. We did.
Yep. We so
it made
that
more
truck
sense.
Showed up, and that truck didn't stop anywhere but to take a pee and maybe get a sandwich. And it was spendy. Holy crap. I think it was like almost $3,000.
Just to ship them. Yet for the number of trays we were sending, when you added it all up from doing a tray at a time, you know, postal service or someone else, it ended up being okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Comparatively.
Yeah. You're not sending one tray of 21 plugs. Custom right. critical. Well, you could, but I mean, they were that good. I mean, you would No, they were good, but they weren't that good.
Mm-hmm. They were plants. Mm-hmm. And they were, as we'll get into, disease-free when they left the building.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine print.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. The first thing for growers and for producers that is critical to understand. First off, there's way too many assumptions made. And what we discovered is that we, no matter how clear we could be and how clearly we stated in any of our printed material, website discussions, blah, 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 the date that we give you for shipping is an estimate and could vary by as much as 6 weeks, depending on what the plants do. And so for growers, you're like, well, but you're growing inside in a greenhouse. Uh-huh. I get that. Just because it's controlled environment doesn't mean you really have all that much control. So understand how they wake up from dormancy, whether or not they – there's so many variables there that it's not like you're growing these things in a self-contained growth chamber at NASA where you can control everything but gravity. No, that's not the case. So you're still subject, you know, to light variability. And even if you have greenhouse lights, it's still not as good as Mother Nature, and temperature fluctuates, just all kinds of stuff, let alone trying to control for things like mildew and spider mites or things like that. So that window, they say, yep, they're going to, your order's going to be ready on May 13th. Bullshit. The only way you could know that is if you ordered it a week before and they just had them sitting there.
Right.
If you're in February and you're pre-ordering and they're not, you know, and plants aren't even out of dormancy yet, it's a guess. It's a total guess. If you wait until like, okay, my plants are supposed to ship tomorrow and you call them and say, when are my plants shipping? And they don't give, and at that point they give you an update, shame on both of you.
That is true. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes it happens in the other direction too, is, you know, things are moving along, you know, you're not getting these until the middle of May. It's the last week of April. Hey, guess what? Your plants are ready. We're shipping them. I don't want them yet. Tough. We got to make room. Here are your plants.
Boy, those last couple of years, it was like that. People are like, well, I can't take them until June 15th. No. We need the space. Therefore, you are taking them. Well, can you just hold them for me? No.
Where?
Exactly. Well, first off, where? And second, it's a liability, a huge liability to hold on to those things, because now I've got to put them in a holding greenhouse that isn't nearly as secure, and it takes maintenance and labor and whatnot, and I'm going to do that for free? No.
No.
Nope. Say, yeah, okay, we'll hold them, but it's going to cost you 20 cents a plant a day while they're here. Oh, okay, we'll just ship them.
And by the way, how do I store them?
Right. Yeah. How do I store them? How do I take care of them? Not my problem. You ordered these, they're your plants. Non-refundable.
Now, that said, we did give instructions on here's how you store your plants, here's how you take care of your plants. And one of the kind of fun things we did, which wasn't, I don't think it was by any means a huge moneymaker, but we offered what we called a six-pack. So if you were a gardener, if you were a backyard grower who wasn't really a hop grower,
homebrew,
but you came across hop plants, we would sell you a six-pack of plants, and that came with an instruction sheet of how to store them and how to plant them and basic, you know, nutrient management, very basic.
Little bag and of fertilizer, even, too.
Yeah. And we even split them up, those six-packs, into, I think we had, you know, variety dependent. Here's your Noble Hop six-pack, and mm-hmm. here's your IPA six-pack. I mean, we made it kind of a cute thing.
Yeah, we didn't sell that many of those. I mean, no. I thought it would be, based on the number of like, our homebrew shops that we had selling pellets to, they would sell rhizomes. And we're like, well, why are you doing that? Let's do this, and we'll give you guys a cut.
Yep.
We thought that was really going to be a big deal. It didn't. It went.
Yeah, it really went nowhere. We put ads up with a bunch of homebrew shops, both by you and by me, and it just didn't go anywhere.
And it was kind of a pain in the ass if you ask our techs that were doing the work. Because you want to deal in whole trays. You don't want to deal in partial plugs and things like that. It's just a nightmare.
And I want to say, if my memory serves, I could be completely wrong here, maybe 30 trays to an acre was around the math.
Well, let me do the math. We were in result undefined. That's no good.
What kind of calculator are you using?
I was counting backwards year-wise. I've got 47. Trays.
47.
Yeah, huh. 21 plants in a tray and 1,000 plants to the acre. So.
Okay. All right, I was off by about 50%. Okay. Well, it's been a while since we've done that.
It is, yeah. Yep, 47.6 trays.
So, yeah, from a delivery, from a logistics perspective, so, as you mentioned, we had, over the years, a couple of different folks working the greenhouse, and it was not your primary responsibility to be in that greenhouse or mine. So we had a lot of that done by other folks who worked for us. And I was the face of, okay, how many do you order? We have your deposit. Here's when you're getting them. And I think we got to a point maybe in March or so where every Monday I was getting an update, you know, new dates on when things would be available. Those dates would go later or earlier, and we'd have this many trays of Triple Pearl on this date, but the next 10 trays won't be until 2 weeks later. And I was sending out regular updates to our customers, some of which just never responded and were like, whatever, and some of which complained like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this was a month or two in advance, I would start sending these updates of, you know, here's where things are. Because to your point, shame on me if I waited until the day it was supposed to ship and say, oh, by the way, you know, we got 8 weeks to go here. So we did try to communicate. And I think if it's one piece of advice here, it's for the love of God, as a business owner, you need to communicate to your customers, especially if you're, you know, for lack of a better term, failing to deliver on what you're supposed to deliver to them.
And being as honest as you can up front. And by honest, I mean, you know, not saying, well, I'm not sure how well it's going to turn out this year. You know, no. Saying, this is what you're buying, and these are the stipulations that you're agreeing to. These are the conditions. And we reserve the right to tell you that, guess what? We had a propagation failure because it's not 100%. There's all kinds of crap that could go wrong. Let's say your mist bench where you're trying to keep your propagules watered fails over the weekend and nobody catches it and they all die. Well, now you got to start over. But let's say you just went through all of your mother stock, so you have nothing else to cut on. It's going to take a while. It could take another month for those things to grow out so you can cut on them again. So there are, you know, shit happens in the production world, and you have to be blatantly above board with your customers saying, we reserve the right to move your order around to suit the greenhouse production schedule. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, you have to be honest with them, and I don't know how else to say it. You have to be honest about being honest with them. Mm-hmm. You know, that you, to your point, you tell them very very frankly up front. And I think, if I recall correctly, we had dates on the website saying, you know, we're taking orders, these varieties, delivery is target. I think we said something like delivery is targeted for the end of June, but it, as we get closer, those dates will very likely move, you know, based on Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. Who, to your point earlier, still finds her way into the greenhouse to fuck things up.
Absolutely. Even if it's biosecure and you have a two-door system with a vestibule and only certain people can get in and all sorts of stuff, she still monkeys with the whole system. I don't care what you're doing. You'd have to be in a concrete block building with no windows and nothing and circulated air. I mean, yeah, it's there's so much to juggle there.
Yeah, I just you said biosecure and I flinched because of the number of times I had to send those emails that things were late.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. So we talked a little bit about the scheduling. Let's talk more about the logistics of. Yep. Getting plants to people. Let's walk them through actually what happens behind the scenes so they have a better understanding of when you place an order. Now, everybody's different, right? What we did and what Sandy Ridge does and what all these other people do are going to be slightly different. But in general, you have to advertise. You have to be above board like we talked about. You know, you're going to trade shows doing stuff. You take the order. You provide an expectation. We start growing or waking them up out of dormancy, whatever it is. So for us, we would put our plants into dormancy. Some people said, oh, no, you don't need to put your plants into dormancy. Just keep them going year round. Let me tell you, even under artificial lights, they absolutely stop growing, for lack of a better term, in the winter months. There's no point. There's no point in keeping the greenhouse warm and the lights on and spending all that electricity if your plants grow 2 inches. So we would put them in the dormancy. So we'd put them in the dormancy around December, drop the greenhouse temp, turn the lights off, wake them up in early February, start pushing them under lights and ramp the heat up. So that would mean we couldn't start taking cuttings until late March, usually. We're out doing the whole trade show circuit in the wintertime and advertising, and orders start coming in. When did orders start coming in?
Oh, gee, we were taking orders, I think, in November, December.
Right.
In advance, so we knew what we wanted to grow. But I think, more importantly, when would we stop taking orders?
Right.
And that was probably in late February, early March, because at that point we were full, mm-hmm. and we had to start.
We knew how much time it took in general to turn a greenhouse. And our greenhouse was small. It was 40 by 90, I think, something like that, 96. Mm-hmm. And we could do, let's say 50,000 plants in a turn,
something. I want to say it was 40 and change.
Yeah, but, something like that. So, So that would mean we'd roll the greenhouse stock multiple times, usually three times, and so we could do out of that greenhouse space, we could do 120,000 plants. Let's just say for giggles. So we had to have that schedule dialed in really tightly, so we know okay, we're gonna. It really didn't. To some extent, some varieties took longer to root than others and to grow out. But in general, we could say, okay, we're going to push these, and then we're going to roll them. We're going to push these, and we're going to roll them. But we couldn't do it past a certain time because it just got too damn hot in the greenhouse. We had to be done propagating, like no more cutting and sticking by the end of May. Mm-hmm. And figure from the time we stuck them on the mist bench to the time they were out of house was a month, something like that.
That sounds about right. And so when you say it all like that, I'm going to take us back to expectations. Mm-hmm. As a consumer of those products, it sounds like, okay, that's a plan. It sounds very cut and dry. Mm-hmm. Nudge, nudge, cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice.
And
see what you did there.
Yeah, isn't that great? And why then can things be off by 8 weeks?
Right.
When that sounds so logical and check the box.
Well, because, like I said, shit happens, right? So, for instance, all it takes is a failure of a valve on your mist bench for a couple of days, and you wipe out 90% of whatever you just cut for propagation. Mm-hmm. Now you're taking cuttings off of mother plants, and you cut on, you know, you could have a dozen mother plants that'll produce 1,000 or more cuttings. So if you exhaust the vegetative material in those mother plants, you got nothing left until they grow out again. That takes time. And like we talked, that could take a month before you have enough stock to cut on. And that was usually what would happen. You'd be like, okay, well, I've got all of this plant material. And if I looked at all of the cuttings I could take, yeah, I could meet those numbers. But we've got 20 varieties, and all those varieties grow at a different rate. Mm-hmm. So Triple Pearl and Chinook were ridiculously vegetative, so we could get gobs and gobs of cuttings off of those. But Saaz and Cashmere were a freaking nightmare because they just wouldn't grow. Or Northern Brewer was the worst. It's just, they're slow, super slow. So it's like, yeah, if somebody came in and said, yeah, I want 10,000 Northern Brewer, you're like, yeah, okay, I've got, you know, 200 mother plants, but we don't have the time to do that because they take so long to grow out after you cut on them. It's just not about total number of propagations that you can get. It's also about which varieties and how long they're going to take to root. And sometimes some varieties don't propagate as well as others under certain temperatures, blah, blah, blah. But you've got one greenhouse. It's not like I can separate them out and have different rooting conditions. And so you've got to juggle that. And sometimes the schedule gets pushed.
Oh, yeah. It's not like being in the back of the car with your siblings. You stay on this side and I stay on this side.
No, yeah,
exactly. The plants don't do that.
There's an invisible wall here. Stop touching me.
You know, I remember Triple Pearl being, to your point, very, very successful for us in terms of growing. Mm-hmm. It was one of those we always had. And yeah, I mean, we did some Saaz, which were not easy. And of course, folks log in and go, ooh, you really? I want some of that. Well,
yeah.
Please take the Triple Pearl.
Yeah. You're going to be much happier with them. Not only were they harder to propagate, they're also just harder to grow in general out in the field. So we had to be a little bit. Holotower was the same way. It's just awful to grow in the greenhouse, and we just could barely manage those.
And yet, as you know, lovers of hops and as scientists, especially starting this venture out, it was, what can we grow? You know, mm-hmm. I don't think we thought about it from a perspective of, let's take the three or four varieties that people can grow easily and that we can grow easily. You know, could we do Holotower? Yeah, let's do Holotower.
Yeah.
You want to try everything. You want to do it all.
And getting the stock, when you're first starting out, getting stock that's virus free is next to impossible. Even from the Clean Plant Network, there's so many plants that cuttings that I got from the Clean Plant Network that had viruses is ridiculous. And so we got to the point where we couldn't trust them. And so in many cases, digging super deep into my plant propagation background, we had to clean those cuttings up from viruses using various heat treatment methods and actually going down. You heard me talk about in the past about the apical dome and all those few layers of cells and all that kind of stuff. Putting these babies under a microscope, cutting that apical dome off with a scalpel and propagating it on sterile media. And then running it through a heat cycle in order to kill off any virus that's in there without killing the plant, sort of like chemotherapy and radiation, and then growing those out to get virus-free stock.
We've heard you talk about the apical dome. We just assumed it was another word you were making up
there. Right, yeah. No, I've physically cut them off of plants in order to get them to be disease-free or virus-free. It's no joke when people talk about, oh, these are virus-free. Really? But we should talk about that a little bit too.
Yeah, I alluded to it earlier that we, in the paperwork we would send out with the plants, we would say these plants were in a biosecure facility, da da da. You know, virus free, to your point, is a tricky thing to claim. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had folks, and everyone has folks who will say things like this, say, hey, you know, I planted your plants and they were all diseased. Okay. Once they left my secure facility, they picked up that disease likely from you, mm-hmm. not from us. So that was in our literature that basically said, once it's in your field, we take no responsibility or ownership of anything that went along for the ride.
Right. And we never claimed things like downy mildew free.
No, you can't.
We would do our best to do that unless I put some sort of ridiculous HEPA filtration and UV sterilization on the intake air. I can't guarantee that they're downy free.
And you know, you've heard us talk about downy enough that 3 days in a USPS box being shipped and downy could manifest. So
yeah, and many of the people we were shipping to had downy. They're going to get downy one way or the other. So we would not say they were downy free. Absolutely not. We managed for it, and we wouldn't ship anything that obviously had downy presenting. Couldn't guarantee it.
Wouldn't we spray for it as we box them as well?
Yeah.
I mean, literally right before shipping them out the door.
Yep. We took every measure we possibly could. We could talk about biosecurity and how you, quote, ensure that at a later time if people want to. But it's all data. It's statistics. It is super boring.
But it's important from a running a business perspective, you know, to take it away from the science side for a second. Mm-hmm. It's about doing the right thing for the plants, but it's also about making sure you're positioning yourself properly with the customer. At the end of the day, as a business owner, you want a satisfied customer. A satisfied customer is a loyal customer who sends other customers your way, who comes back for return business, all those things. Mm-hmm. So if you provide a product that isn't right, and there are so many ways that someone can receive a bad product from you or misinterpret what they're receiving from you, that communication up front and during the whole process, it's huge. It's everything. I'm not going to say it's – I almost said it's more important than the actual product, which is not true. but, you know, deliver the product correctly and, for the love of God, communicate, and then communicate the fact that you communicated with them.
Right. Yep. Two other things I want to talk about from the logistics side, and that'll probably chew up our time here. We could talk about technical greenhouse stuff later for people who want to try their own stuff. But
sure.
Let's talk about the last two things I want to cover are getting plants to the customer. And then I want to talk about dealing with shit that goes wrong. when things go south, what are your options? You handled all the shipping. You and Hannah and Amanda dealt with figuring out all the shipping. I didn't want anything to do with it. I had another business to run. I had a hop yard to manage, equipment to build. So you guys dealt with the shipping. So tell us about that.
Well, as a starting point, I still haven't
sucked.
I still haven't forgiven you for it. Let's start there.
Yeah.
And it's not quite 10 a.m. and I think I might need a drink to actually have this conversation. So shipping.
Let's just say freight companies suck. All of them.
Yes.
They all suck.
They do. They're horrible. I hate them all. Mm-hmm. And I know at the moment that is not a nice thing to say, because especially during all the lockdowns and all that, these guys were out there delivering all of our toilet paper and everything else. So thank you for that. I'm going to say the logistical side of it, the organization side of it, did not go well for us on a variety of levels. So think about a tray of plants. So a tray was 38. Is that – I know we just did this math earlier.
I thought we did 21s.
Was it?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why our numbers are different. We'll have to.
Oh, you're right. They were.
They were 38s.
You were totally right, Greg. They were 38s. Yep.
So it was 30 trays to an acre.
It was 30 trays to an acre. Yes.
Okay. Aha.
Yes, you're correct.
Can the kicker at the end of this episode be you were right, Greg?
Because you were right, Greg.
Woohoo! Yay! All right, so I forgot we were going to talk about it now. I'm just so excited. It changed my mood entirely.
Shipping a tray of plants.
Shipping a tray of plants.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm sad again. Mm-hmm. Okay, shipping a tray of plants. So think about a tray of 38 plants. Think about the weight of the soil around those 38 plants. It's got to be flat. It can't be turned upside down, but it will be.
Yep.
It will be. So you've got to account for that. If you stack them, you're going to get some squishing going on, mm-hmm. because these are plants. So the packing and distribution of these things – now you've got all that. You've got all the physical aspect of it. So they're heavy. They cost a lot. We're doing them via ground. It was usually, I want to say, UPS ground. From a cost perspective, it was crazy otherwise. And we were shipping them from, luckily, Wisconsin. So it wasn't like you were having to traverse the entire country. Mm-hmm. So our most difficult places to get plants to were the points where Florida, where we didn't have many to ship, but Maine, we did have some to ship. I think New Mexico, we ended up having a bunch. Mm-hmm. So there were points that were far away where we put together a map, a color-coded map up on the website saying, look, this is by state what it's going to cost per tray for, you know, two or less, because we had boxes. We had one tray boxes and two tray boxes. And if you're doing more than that, I think if you got to like 12 or so, we would do – I don't think we ever got to the point of pallets and freight, but we would do, to your point, like a direct ship of some sort if it got to a very large amount.
Yeah, we'd build racks for, you know, multiple mm-hmm. acres, but you're talking about shipping boxes for small quantities.
Yep, yeah, for a tray or two or four or six at a time. And the number of times someone would send me a note and say, okay, I had eight trays coming, six of them are here. That was 2 days ago. My other two trays aren't here, and they're probably dead in the mail stream somewhere. The number of times I had to get on the phone with the Postal Service or with that last mile carrier, because very often these boxes went to either a UPS facility or to the Postal Service. Then from there, it went with someone else. Especially, I had a couple of these, a rural farm that didn't get mail every day because they were that far.
Right.
I had one in particular which was getting a large, large order, and the truck turned around 2 days in a row because they just didn't get there in mm-hmm. time before the day was over. And these plants were, you know, dying on the truck.
Yep.
And you think that your carrier is going to reimburse you?
No, because they'll tell you, we do not – some of them won't even take live plants just because they're like, we're not even goofing around with that. So we learned the hard way after quite a while to engage the customer to figure out where they're at, how they get packages, and what was the way to ship it. In some cases, I know we said, we can't get them to you.
Yep. Yep. There are parts of the country where we said it was not going to happen. Just wouldn't work.
I said, unless we hire someone to drive them to your front door, we're not going to get them to you.
That said, I do remember distinctly sending a six-pack of plants to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to work with that customer and say, look, this is going to cost it's going to cost more for you to ship these than what we're going to charge you for the plants. But if you want them, we'll send them.
And all of the phytosanitary documentation and all that kind of stuff for shipping live plants into Hawaii, yeah, that was a giant nightmare. But they wanted them. Okay. They wanted them. Yep. Those were $30 a piece plugs. Congratulations.
Oh, boy. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Well, we're out of time already. We didn't ever get to the last part.
Wow. Is it a quick one? We can fit it in.
Okay, sure. Well, what to do when things go wrong?
Start a podcast.
Start a podcast. Yep. Sell it all and start a podcast. as a customer, what do you do? I mean, what are your options when somebody calls you and says, guess what? You know, those plants you're going to get in May, you're not going to get them until July.
I'm going to take a page from your book and say it depends.
It does depend. Depends on where you're at. Mm-hmm. You know, we knew that if even in most places in the U.S., if you could get them in before mid-July, they would establish and overwinter. Even in the Wisconsin winter, they would be fine. But if you're in Canada, that may be far too late because you just don't have enough time to get that plant established.
Yep.
So that's totally up to you, right, on how you do it. But what are your options? Very few. Very few. You rolled the dice and you gambled. That's what happens. You could see, all right, well, maybe I'm not going to get all the plants I want. Maybe I could get some. Do you have any to send me? Sometimes that works. Yeah. Yep. We can do that. And we can take whatever stock is left and we'll put it in a dormancy and ship it to you first thing next spring. We've done that before. Sometimes people's like, well, all right, well, what other varieties you have that are ready?
Some triple pearl for you right here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we could swap these out. What are they like? Okay, yeah, I'll take those. So, I mean, you can be a little flexible, but if they propagated something special for you and they couldn't deliver, you're kind of SOL.
Very true. And I want to say, in my recollection, for the most part, the small growers, the ones who were getting a tray or two or four, if we had an issue like that and said, hey, we will not have that, but we'll have this. The vast majority were very happy to have something. Because mm-hmm. if you're buying two trays, four trays, you're not buying 30, you're not doing an acre, you're experimenting.
Right.
So it's okay to use a different variety, and folks were absolutely fine with that for the most part.
Except for the people that are doing 20 acres, and they're like, okay, yeah, I need 90 or 120 trays of saws, and you're like, I got 60. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, don't lie, you know, just avoid them because you're just putting off the inevitable.
Right, you got to communicate.
And as the earlier you can let that grower know it, the more, you know, wiggle room they have to pivot. I mean, as a propagator, you might lose the business, but that's part of the learning process.
It is. And it's, you know, I hate to just keep beating a dead horse, but it's about all that upfront communication, talking to your customer. As a customer, as you said early on here, if you wait until the day before you're expecting the shipment to ask, well, shame on you. Mm-hmm. There is nothing wrong with, on a, you know, heck, even a weekly basis, reaching out and going, so are we still on target? Are we still on target? Are we still on target? Yeah, you're going to be annoying. You're the customer.
Yep.
You're always right.
You're spending how much money on these plants? Mm-hmm. And you're going to wait till the day they're supposed to ship to ask, you know, hey, did they ship yet? And then you hear them say, did what ship?
And, you know, you hate to say, you need to be prepared for some kind of a pivot. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you should expect your provider to fail you.
No.
But know of other propagators. You know, keep your options open. But one of the points you made earlier was, you know, maybe as a propagator, you give them another option, a different variety, or you point them toward a friend. Did we ever have to go to Julie at Sandy Ridge, who we should absolutely have on the show?
Oh yeah,
and ask for assistance with, hey, we can't get these 10 trays of you know,
yep,
sterling. Can you do this for us?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you build that network of people that you trust to go to and say, here you go. Can you do this for me, and what would it cost? And yeah, it's going to end up costing you more, or, you know, because you're going to buy them from them and then move them on. So you're not going to probably make anything on it, but you're going to satisfy your requirement. Or you just send that customer to the other propagator, which, you know, they're going to be like, well, you're sending me to these guys and they can fill the order. So next time I'm going to order with them. Yep. Sorry, but that could possibly be true.
Sometimes that'll be the reaction. I feel like more than not, the feedback I would receive was, hey, thank you for being upfront. We appreciate your honesty and you're helping us get this thing straightened out. And it, as a consumer, think about that as a consumer experience from the other side. The company, I mean, imagine if, I don't know, Apple broke your iPhone and said, you know what, we can't get that working. We're going to send you a Samsung. How would you react to that? Mm-hmm. Wow, you're willing to hand me to a competitor just to keep me okay. That if the right kind of consumer is going to take that for what it's worth and come back to you again because they know they can trust you to do anything to get the job done.
Why didn't we get any of those consumers?
Who'd send us free iPhones, you mean? No, I remember, you know, with the issues we had, look, we had people who got irate and angry, but we also had people who just really appreciated the honesty.
True.
And I will take one of them any day over someone who's willing to pay me double just to get it done and be mad about it. Mm-hmm. You know, give me good people to work with any day of the week.
You were right, Greg.